For those who are watching this class on Torah Anytime, I want to give acknowledgement to a great organization, a tremendous service, hosting my classes as well as thousands and thousands of other classes. And I encourage anyone to participate in their annual campaign. Information of the campaign is there on your screen above this video screen over here. And again, encourage you to participate in whatever way you can to spread Torah to all around the world. All these shiurim can provide so much inspiration and value to everyone. And as you yourselves are watching, and thank you for watching. So I want to zoom in over here to Pasuk Tes Zayin. Let's say Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Tes Vav. So it's chapter 16, verse 15. And it's if you want to, it's like the, if anyone, I have a few sheets of extra papers over there with the sources over here. But it's chapter 16, verse 15. So it says, "V'yir b'nei Yisrael." So the Jewish people saw the man. They saw this heavenly food, this miraculous food which descended from Shemayim. "V'yomru ish el achiv," and each one said to his brother, "Man who, man." So the word man is the translation of the word manna. Manna is the translation of the word man. I think really the word man is the first word, right? So they said to each other, "Man who?" They said, "It's man." We'll define it in a second. Ki lo yadu mahu, because they didn't know what it was. They didn't know what it was. They never seen this before. For Yom Moshe, Moshe said, "Aleihem," to them, "Hu alechem," that's the bread, that's the food, "Asher nosen HaKadosh Baruch Hu lechem la'achol," this is the food which Hashem has given you to eat. That's what it is. That's what it is. It's the lechem which Hashem has given to you to eat. But they described it, and they called it man. They called it man. So what does man mean? What does the word man mean? Right? So I'm not opening it up, but Rashi says, if you look at the Rashi over here, if you have the source sheets over here, it's the next number two, or Beis. Rashi says, "Man hu," the word "man" is hachonas mazon hu. It's a prepared type of nourishment. It's prepared food. It's food which is prepared because it is, because there was no effort, there was no preparation which was necessary. It was it's grab and go, right? It's grab and go. There's no preparation. You just take it, you eat it, and you're good. There's no preparation. Hachonas mazon hu. It's a prepared food. Kamo v'yaman lo hem ha-melech, like a pasuk in Daniel, which says that the king provided a daily ration. But that's what the word man means. It's a prepared type of food, and that's what it is. So they called it man because they just perceived it and experienced it as a prepared food and nothing more than that. As Rashi goes on, ki lo yadu mahu, because they didn't know what it was specifically. Sheyikru'uhu b'shmo, to call it by its actual name. I can't call it bananas, because it's not bananas. I can't call it carrots, it's not carrots. I can't call it wheat, it's not wheat. It's not that, I don't know what it is. So therefore, the only thing I can name it is just by the general, generic description of it being a prepared kind of food. It's prepared, it's ready. And that's what it's called. So it's interesting, isn't it, right? We all know the word manna. We all know this word. Everyone knows. The whole world knows about the manna. Everyone knows that. And it's from this word man. But what is it? What's the meaning of it? Prepared food. So this is what the name goes down for time immemorial, for generations, that this miraculous food is called prepared food. Prepared food. Which is kind of curious. Like, why is that the identity of it? You know, it's miraculous food, but to bear this name of, it's prepared food. It's grab and go. You know, that's what it was. The story of the man is the story of grab and go. And that becomes the time immemorial definition and name of this miraculous food. Like, what's that about? Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, if we think about that, that's their perception of this food, that it's ready to eat. It's ready. No preparation. No preparation, no work, no effort. It's great, isn't it? I mean, isn't it great? Like, you know, I mean, just imagine a world where we have to do nothing to prepare for all of the brachas which we want, for the things which we want. Imagine a job where you have to do nothing, or not even a job. Imagine you're getting a free handout. Imagine you have food already prepared. Everything is ready. in a certain sense, it's a tremendous bracha. It's a tremendous bracha, but at the same time, tremendous challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge, right? So in that substance called the man is this challenge of what are we going to do with our spare time with not having to prepare for it? Because it's already ready. It's already ready. So now I get this tremendous gift of the food is ready, it's prepared, there's no effort, there's no toil, there's no effort whatsoever in it, and I've got it. I could just go home and eat, enjoy, and relax, and sit on the beach and just have a good time. It's all ready, no work whatsoever. What a challenge that is. What a challenge. And that's exactly what the Pasuk says. You go back to Pasuk Dalet, that's the introduction to the whole parasha of the Mon. It says, V'yoma Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Hinni mamtir lechem lechem in the Shemayim. Behold, I'm going to rain down upon you bread from the heavens. V'yotza'am, the people shall go out. V'loktu devar yom b'yom, where they should all gather it on a daily basis. Go and gather this prepared, ready to go food. Leman anasenu hayelech b'sarasi imlo, to test you. To see, are you going to go in my law or not? Are you going to follow my law or not? Now, the truth is, it's a bit ambiguous on the surface. Rashi explains what that means is, right? Rashi says, to test you, to see if you're going to observe the mitzvahs associated with the mon. To see if you're going to follow these rules properly. Namely, Rashi says, not to leave anything over of it and also not to collect it on Shabbos. I want to see exactly how you're going to treat this mom, which I'm going to give to you. But that's not what I want to focus on. It's the other pshatim, which I want to focus on. The Sforno, in number five, in the source Hey, number five, it says, the Sforno says, Lemana nesanu hayilich b'sarasi. I want to test you to see if you're going to go in my Torah or not. Kashiya misparnei shalu b'tzara. Right? When you're being supported with no effort, with no toil, with no difficulty, when you have everything laid out on a silver platter, everything is ready for you to see, what are you going to do with your time? How are you going to spend the time now? As it says, Chazal say, lo nitna Torah ala l'ochle aman. The Torah was given to those who ate man. Because the Torah is given to those who eat man, because the man is a bracha, an incredible bracha, no effort, to allow us to give our time over to the spiritual pursuits of life, that we shouldn't be busy working and working and working, so we have less time to learn. So when we're free, we're now able to learn. The Or HaChaim, the next one, the Or HaChaim writes, he says, Lemana nesenu, ki lechem in the shemayim, because heavenly bread, lo yistarech shum tikkun, doesn't require any preparation. Heavenly bread doesn't require any preparation. Ubezeh yupenuyim mikol, and through this, you'll be completely free and available for any other activities, ve'era, ahelach, and I'll see whether you're not going to follow my ways and devote your time to learning and doing mitzvahs. Devoting your time to learning and doing mitzvahs. It's a simple idea, right there in the Pesukim, that the whole message of the Mon is to test us, and as if we don't have Mon today, but we all have our personal experiences of Mon, in the sense of we all have, in our different stages of our lives, or different parts of the week, for example, where we have free time, where we're free, we're not involved in working, we're not involved with responsibilities, and I have freedom. What do I do with my time? Where do I spend my time? Am I spending my time? I think there's some kind of sports thing happening this Sunday.
Two teams are just playing some football.
I'm getting myself into trouble again. I did this a few weeks ago on a Sunday. That's why less people are here today. I'm not getting into the politics or the personal act, but it's a lesson. Again, we're here in order to strive and to reach higher. And to always be asking ourselves and to be contemplating, where am I spending what am I doing with my spare time? Am I spending my spare time learning, doing mitzvahs, doing chesed, visiting people, davening, praying, using the time wisely? I mean, we only live once. We only live once. And time is precious. So when we have the free time, when we're not involved in the efforts of making a living or working or doing whatever other necessary mundane activities which we have to engage in, What am I doing with my spare time? Every single minute and every second is so precious. So that's the challenge that the Mon presents to the Jewish people. It's a challenge for us. It's an eternal challenge. You know, in contrast to this, there's the if you at the very beginning of the parasha, says that when they came out of Mitzrayim, pasuk Yotes, the pasuk says Vayikach Moshe es atmos Yosef, that Moshe took from Mitzrayim the bones of Yosef. Ki hashbeya hishbiya es b'nei Yisrael, because he adjured the Jewish people, because Yosef adjured his brothers, the B'nai Yisrael, saying to them, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Esachem, Hashem is going to remember you in the future. This is when he was in Mitzrayim, Yosef said this to the brothers, he's going to remember you, and he's going to Valisem Esatzmosai, he's going to take you out of Mitzrayim, Halisem Esatzmosai, take my bones out of Mitzrayim, make sure I get buried in Eretz Yisrael. And this is now the part, this is the fulfillment. Moshe is taking the bones of Yosef, bringing them out of Mitzrayim as they're traveling out of Mitzrayim. So what's the stress over here? Like, why is the Pasuk stressing this? So the Gemara says, Gemara Sota says that, Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, kama chavivus mitzvahs al Moshe Rabbeinu. Come and see and recognize how precious mitzvahs were to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Shekol Yisrael kula on this aska b'biza, because the rest of the Jewish people were preoccupied with the biza, with the splendor and the spoil of Mitzrayim, trying to grab as much as they could get of all of the silver and the gold. They were busy with that. V'hu nisasek b'mitzvahs, and he was busy with mitzvahs. He was busy with mitzvahs, and that's what the pasuk is stressing. He had it right. He had it clear. What's the priority? What's the most important thing? Well, we need the treasures, while we need the gold, while we need the silver, while we need the materialism, while we need all these different physical things. But that's not where it's at. That's not the ikka. The primary part of life is the mitzvahs. He was nisasi mitzvahs, as it says, beautiful pasuk in Mishlei, chacham leiv yikach mitzvahs. A smart person grabs mitzvahs. A smart person takes mitzvahs. That's what a smart person is. So the Chofetz Chaim had many mashalim, many little metaphors. There's what the Chofetz Chaim says, tells a story of a person that he finds out about a tremendous opportunity in a far off land to make a lot of money. And the country, the island is just laden from top to toe, top to bottom, all around, with gold and gems and all sorts of precious stones and everything. And this was his opportunity to be able to make, to be able to gather. And he went on a ship, and it was like a golden opportunity. And he gets to this little island, he gets off the boat, and the captain of the boat says, listen, you know, I'll be back in 6 months. Gather as much as you can. And when I come back in 6 months, you'll have what you need to go back to your family with. So he gets off the boat, he goes, walks, and he gets settled in over there. And it's true. The island is just laden with gold and silver and everything. It's just unbelievable. And he starts gathering the stuff, and he gets a little bit. And as he kind of gets used to the environment he's in, he realizes it's so not precious over there, that there was no value to the gold and the silver and the gems to the people of this island. They really, he began to kind of like lose sight of the special value of it all. But in this particular island, what was very special to them and very valuable was schmaltz, right? Schmaltz was a commodity. It was a rare commodity. What schmaltz, for those who don't know schmaltz, is?
Chicken fat.
It's a marshal. Don't forget, it's a marshal. That's not a true story, but it's a marshal, right? So the schmaltz was very, it was a rare commodity. And he realized, you know what? I know how to make schmaltz. Back in the old country, I was very good at making schmaltz. So he starts making schmaltz, and he starts selling the schmaltz, and he's like, and he makes a whole business selling schmaltz, and he's got piles. He's got a whole factory, a whole warehouse of schmaltz. I don't know if it lasts that long, but anyway, so he's got all the schmaltz, and he's accumulated all the schmaltz, and then 6 months go by, right? He'd forgotten completely, right? To gather all the gems and all of the gold and all the silver and everything. And the end of 6 months, he gets on his boat. He's all happy. He's got so much schmaltz. He gets on his boat with all the schmaltz, and he comes back to Europe with the schmaltz, right? He comes back to Europe with all the schmaltz. I mean, what a foolish, you know, a foolish man. But it's so stupid when you think about it. It's a foolish person. But isn't that the picture? Isn't that the story of so many people in this world, right? This temporary world. We come into this, the neshama descends down, comes down into this physical world, lands over here, understanding from where it came from that the true value is mitzvahs, the true value is the neshama, the true value is the ruchnius. It descends down into this world, and then it gets sidetracked and gets distracted by all of the schmaltz, all the schmaltz of this world, right? And then the captain comes and says, okay, it's time to come back. And then it's already too late because they spend all the time gathering schmaltz and they don't have any mitzvahs with them to go back with, right? That's what it is. A chacham lev yikach mitzvahs. A smart person grabs mitzvahs. And that's what that's the test of the mon. That is the test of the mon. The test of the mon is, what are we going to do with our spare time? Are we going to grab mitzvahs? Are we going to learn? Or are we going to just, I'm not going to say watch the Super Bowl, but okay, that's just but things like that, you know.
But the people are complaining about the mon.
Yeah. So that's one lesson. That's one idea of the mon. So that's taking the definition. It's interesting. That's taking the definition of the word mon as prepared food, right? That's what Rashi said. Prepared food. That's not how everyone explains it. There are other ways to explain the word mon. The Rashbam, for example, if you look on the source sheet over here, the Rashbam is number 9. The Rashbam says something very interesting. Rashbam is one of the Rishonim, one of the medieval commentators, classic commentators. The Rashbam says, Ani Omer, I say that the expression mon of mon is monhu, right? Monhu is targumo, its translation is shel ma, what is it? So it means, what is it? What is it? Because they didn't know what it was. It's unusual to them. So the mon doesn't mean, you know, again, putting aside Rashi's pshat of prepared food, right? Another idea. Mon is, what is it? Like, what is it? We don't know what it is. Now, it's a little bit of an unusual word. Mon, where do we find that in Hebrew? So he explains. He says, Levishu Lashem Mitzri. It's an Egyptian word. Mon is an Egyptian word. Get that? Right? Mon is an Egyptian word. Ubosa Lashem HaYeregilim. And that language the Jewish people were familiar with, shukamo ma, it's like saying ma, what is it? So it's Egyptian, right? It's Egyptian for what is it? Mm. Now, and he says, he continues, kos for Moshe ba'usa lashon. So Moshe wrote it in this language, sh'amru lo'dienu, that they said to tell us what it is. Shalafik of Yikaru Beis Yisrael, shemo mon. They called it the mon al shahya tumeyim va'omri, because they were surprised, they didn't know what it was. So he wrote it this way: mon hu kamo mahu. What is it? Like, what does it mean? Now you may be surprised. Why would an Egyptian word be put into the Chumash? It's not uncommon, right? Right, tefillin. Right. How does the Torah describe the word tefillin? Tefillin. It doesn't say the word tefillin. Actually, it says v'ha'yu le'totafos b'nei necha. Right. The head tefillin is totafos. Yeah. What does the word totafos mean? Totafos, what does that mean? So Rashi said at the end of the last week's parasha, right? It's a combination of two foreign words. Tot, I forget which one is which. If you'll take it, it's in the end of the parasha's bow. Tot, I forget which one is which. But Rashi says, right? Two words. It's a blend of two words. So Rashi says, verse 16, it says, Totafos, Rashi says, Tefillin, Al Shem Shem, okay, because there are four compartments in the Tefillin, in the head Tefillin. Tot in Caspi is two, and Pos in Africa is two. It's two different, it's in Caspi and an African language. Right. So that's the, and that's that, that word is you. That's the non-Hebrew word inside the, that's one example. The Rashbam gives another example. He says another example is of foreign words in the Tanakh is also hippel por on Purim. Purim, the Pasuk says, hippel por hu hagorol, that Haman cast a lottery. And the way the Pasuk describes it, hippel por, he cast a por, which is a gorol. The Hebrew word is gorol. Por is not a Hebrew word. Por is not a Hebrew word. Lo hayetzarach lichtav ela hippel gorol. All that the verse should have said is just he cast a gorol, which is the Hebrew word. Hol v'loshen hakodesh nichtav megillah, because the Megillah was written in Hebrew, in Lashon Kodesh. So why does it say the word poor? Poor is a Persian word. Poor is Persian for lottery. Elolodieno, rather it's to tell us, Al-Kain Koruliyomim, therefore they called these days Purim. The Jewish people in those days called the holiday Purim, Al-Shema Pur, because of the poor, because of the Persian word, poor, the lottery. So they called it Purim. So that, so it just, so if they, if so, it, just, try and just keep the, I just, so, so they called it Purim because of the word, because of the Persian word, poor. If it wouldn't have been written in the language they spoke in that kingdom, we wouldn't know why it was called Purim. So have a Persian. So another example of this, says the Rashbam, is the word mon is actually an Egyptian word, and it means what is it? And they were saying, the Jewish people were essentially saying, what is this? Like, what is it? What is this stuff? I don't know. It's so unfamiliar. It's a miraculous food. What is this? What? Where does it come from? What is it? What is it? And then the pasuk says, the pasuk concludes and says, they said, so the pasuk said, mon who? What? Mon, they called it mon because they didn't know what it was. And Moshe then said to them, it's the lechem, it's the bread which Hashem has given you to eat. It's the food which Hashem has given you to eat. But they called it mon after the fact of their ambiguity and unknowing of what this stuff was, right? That's a second pshat, a second understanding. So on this, right, on that understanding, the Sfas Emes, one of the famous, you know, Hasidic commentaries, writes over here, beautiful understanding, a beautiful insight over here. Again, you have to, like, we have to take a step back a little bit when we're looking at these words and these definitions. We have to, that's what I try and do, think about these ideas from a personal perspective and a life perspective, right? Because when these names are going down for time immemorial, so if we're defining mon as a substance of what is it, that's the name mana, mana, mon. It's announcing, it's crying out, what is it? What is it? So that's the name. That's what the name goes down in history. What is it? So what is that? What's the mess? What is the sense? What is the spirit of that message, of that idea? So Sfas Emes writes, Sfas Emes number 10, in this pasuk of Yomru Ish El Echov, each one said to his brother, Monhu, ki lo yodu, because they didn't know what it was. Yom Moshe said to them, yeah, that's the lechem. That's the bread. That's the food which Hashem has given you to eat. The question is Moshe referring to the substance or to something else? So you read the verse simply, they called it mon, they didn't know what it was, and therefore Moshe then said, no, that's the food which Hashem has given to you. That's the food which Hashem has given to you. There's another way to understand the pasuk. Not that that substance itself is what Hashem has given you to eat.
Free time.
No, that's the first pshat. The first pshat. We're not on Rashi's pshat. We're in a different pshat right now. We're defining mon as being what is it? What is it? Mm-hmm. Is it the substance itself which Hashem has given to you, or the question itself? The question of what is it is the sustenance of your life. What does that mean? I'll read what he says. He says, Pirish ze atzmo, this itself, shlo yodu mahu, that they didn't know what it was, and they were in ambiguity, and in confusion, and in a lack of knowledge. That lack of knowledge, that's the lechem, which Hashem is commanding you to eat. Lack of knowledge is your sustenance. Lack of knowledge. Ki tachlis hayidia shelo neda, because the ultimate of knowledge is to know that you don't know. Think about that. The ultimate knowledge is to say, I don't know, is knowing you don't know. Having a question is the tachlis hayidia. Tachlis hayidia is shelo neda, not to know. Shekacha yakol taluchis b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, because this was the entire journey of the Jewish people in the desert. Lechteich acharai b'midba, Beres lezerua, the pasuk says, you're going after me into this barren wasteland of a desert, Eretz lezerua, an unplanted land. Hashem praises the Jewish people. You followed after me into this barren land. You don't know where you were going. The confusion, the ambiguity, the darkness, the fright, the terror, not knowing where you are, going after me. Val ze amru kebehema nimshachanu acharecha, like an animal being drawn after you. We were like an animal being drawn after you, not knowing. That's okay. Adnum behea toshia. Pasuk darshach as a chazal say, aruma bedas. Be clever in your knowledge, like a person, but mesima matzma kebehema, but make yourself like an animal. Make yourself like an animal with ignorance, with a sense of ignorance, not thinking that you know it all and understand it all. And we have to know that we don't know everything, because not knowing itself is a good thing. Not knowing is a good thing. Now, not knowing is a good, having, not knowing everything and not having answers and being confused can be good. Now, what's good about that? What is good about not knowing? What's good about not knowing? So one understanding, I'll be honest, this is how I first understood this. I'm going to read to you something else, a different understanding of it as well. What's the advantage of not knowing? What's the advantage of confusion? What's the advantage of confusion? The advantage of confusion is that when you don't know, you have nowhere to turn but Hashem. Mm. In the gap of confusion and in the gap of unknowing, in that space is where you can find Hashem. Not that Hashem's going to give you the answers, but the security and the security and the bitachon, that even if it goes back to what I said at the very beginning, the security of not of the security of knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, even when you don't know the answers to everything. Mm. Not knowing the answers of something is not just about technical stuff. It's also not knowing the answers of why things are happening in my life. Why are things happening this way? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know. It's okay. It's okay not to know. It's okay not to know, because it's not about knowing everything. It's not about having the answer to every single problem in the world, but having the answer to every single challenge, and having the answer to every single quandary. It's not about that. It's about relying on Hashem. It's about relying on Hashem. It's like a child. It's a child. When the child keeps asking questions, why, you know, why do you have to do this? Why about, you know, why are we going over there? Why are we going, why are we not, you know, I'm going to say something. Why are you not closing the door? Why are we not locking the door? Why are we not doing this? Why? I'm just using personal example there. Right? So why are we not doing this? Why are we not doing that? Why this? Why that? Why that? You know what? The parent feels and that recognizes it's sometimes better that children shouldn't ask so many questions. They shouldn't be discouraged from asking questions. But sometimes too many questions relate or expresses a lack of trust in the parent, a lack of security. Now, they have questions. They may have questions. They genuinely are in a state of confusion in that given situation. But the best thing that the parents can sometimes do is not necessarily to answer every single question, but to project to the child that it's okay. It's safe. You're safe. You're in good hands. You're in good hands. You don't need to know the answer to every single problem and challenge and difficulty you're going through right now, where we are, why are we over here? Why am I doing that? Why am I not doing that? Trust me, that's the relationship that the parent should have to the child. That's the same thing with Hashem as well. Yeah. Is that having, not having the knowledge, not having the clarity, and being confused, it's okay, because in that space, in that gap, in that chasm of confusion is where a relationship with Hashem lives. That's where my emunah, my betochen live, inside that gap. So that's one appreciation of kitachlis yiddish luneda. The goal, the ultimate knowledge is not to know. Because if you know everything, then there's no relationship anymore. There's no confusion. Now you're not relying on Hashem. That's one idea. Another idea is, which I saw over here, Lukute, last source of A, Lukute Halachas, Rav Nachman of Breslov, the famous Rav Nachman of Breslov. So he had his close Talmud, his close disciple was Rav Nosson of Breslov. So he wrote a very famous, voluminous series of Svarim on Halachas, on Shulchan Aruch. And it's called Lukutei Halachos. So he quotes the same phrase of the Tachlis Yedir Ishlo Neida, and he just kind of phrases it slightly differently, but I'll read it. And this is in Hilchos Sukkah, in the laws of Sukkah, right? Lemala Me'esrim Ama, right? A Sukkah, one of the rules of the Sukkah is it can't be taller than 20 Amas, which is about 30 feet. That's the minimum size of a Sukkah, less than 30 feet, 20 Amas. So lemala me'esrim ama ein adam osa dirasa diras arai, because technically on a more of a pragmatic level, a sukkah more than 20 amas is no longer considered a temporary dwelling. And one of the requirements of a sukkah should be a temporary dwelling versus a permanent dwelling. So a sukkah more than 20 amos is not a temporary dwelling, el diras keva, it's more of a permanent dwelling. The anan, sukkah diras arai be'inan. We require a temporary dwelling for a sukkah. Ki a sukkah shehu b'chinas amakifin, because the sukkah which has an understanding of the envelopment of Hashem. The sukkah is being enveloped in Hashem. That's the message of the sukkah. The sukkah which is being enveloped with Hashem, needs to be temporary. The sukkah which is being enveloped with Hashem needs to specifically be temporary. The person shouldn't make a mistake to think that he's already merited to the perfection of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right? Same idea. A person shouldn't think that he's reached the pinnacle, the perfection of knowledge and clarity, once he's reached a certain level of understanding. To now think, oh, I've got it. I understand it. Now I get it. Ki gavoa meyal gavoa. Shoma l'gudulasa in cheka, because Kodesh Baruch Hu is beyond, above and above. His greatness in cheka, there's no limit to the depth of his knowledge and his wisdom and truth. Valkein, therefore, oslik bo dirasa b'sukkah, so therefore it's forbidden to establish one's sukkah, one's dwelling in such a sukkah. Kim shatiya diras arai, in order to teach us that we constantly have to be striving for more and more and more, to always be endeavoring, to toiling in avodas Hashem, to lizkos la'asoga acheres, to reach new levels of understanding, new levels of, but let's say mesukkah l'sukkah, to go from one sukkah to the next. So it's a little bit of a different, you know, angle on this idea of understanding that the ultimate of knowledge is to know that you don't know. Before, I was explaining it as, it's okay not to know, but another angle on it is that by not knowing everything, it compels us to keep learning more. It keeps us humble and realize that there's always more and more and more. We're always going from sukkah to sukkah to sukkah. I'm going from one level of knowledge to another level, because if I'm going to live in a sukkah which is permanent, which is more than 20 amos, thinking that I've already reached my pinnacle of knowledge and clarity, you've made a mistake. There's more to learn. You've got to go from sukkah to sukkah. Ki tachlis yadir shelo neda, because the goal of knowledge is to know you don't know. It's to know that you haven't reached it yet. There's still more to learn. Umi she'ochid b'chidas atachlis zos, someone who tries to attach himself to that, to this goal of realizing there's more to know. That's called always living in a temporary state. There's always more. I haven't stopped. And this does go back to the first message of the month, realizing there's more time. What am I going to do with my free time? Because there's so much more to learn. It's going from diras arai, always living in a state of temporary nature. In terms of the word temporary, implies a disconnect, like a sudden disconnect. It's not really it's not stable. My knowledge, my clarity is not stable. There's more to learn. I'm always constantly striving to learn more. Somebody who thinks he knows more, and he's trying to look at something which is higher than where he really is at. Because he thinks he's already reached the knowledge. Now he's glorifying himself that he knows more. That's a kilkel adas. That's called a ruination of his mind. It's a ruination of his knowledge. Someone who thinks he knows everything about Hashem, and he doesn't really know it, doesn't know anything at all. Someone who goes beyond, who is trying to go beyond his level of knowledge, thinking that he knows more than he really does, is actually causing more of a destruction to himself. But the two dimensions, let's just review this. The two dimensions of the tachlis yadir is not to know. Two dimensions of it. Is the ultimate of knowledge is to be in that place of ambiguity and confusion in order to rely now upon Hashem, and to be safe, and to feel safe and secure of not knowing everything, of not having answers to everything. It's okay. You know why? Because I have a Kaddish Baruch with me. Hashem's with me. Hashem will always be there. And even if I don't know everything, Hashem's there by my side. It's okay. And the second dimension of Tachlis Yiddish Leneida is to realize there's still more to learn. Even don't rest on my laurels that I understand it all. There's still more to learn. And in that sense, it goes back to, again, the first understanding of the mana, of the man, that it's prepared food. So it inspires us to use our time wisely, to use every minute possible, to use all, really, we think about it, use every moment possible to expand my knowledge and also to daven to Hashem, feeling the security when I don't have everything, when I don't understand everything. So that's the message of the Mon. There's two ideas in the Mon. So we should all be Zocha Merit to be able to, again, use our time wisely. Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvahs. Be smart, be wise, grab mitzvahs, use our time wisely to learn more and to also rely upon Hashem in that place of not knowing everything and being confused and not having the answers to every single question. So that's our lesson of the month.